Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
All right, and we are back. And woo! I am fired up to be in the studio here with my guy, Caleb Abney.
What up, Dan?
Big dog, how we doing?
Oh, lovely, lovely. Great, great week of lacrosse.
It was a wild one, and I don't know 100%. I think at this point I'm about ready to say for with certainty that I think that Saturday was just about the craziest Saturday that we've had since I've started doing any of this coverage.
Yep.
We had a handful of overtimes. We had Coach Berkman bringing in win 600. We had a traditional power losing to a rising power. We had all sorts of interesting results. We had some D3 pod bumps this week. Mm-hmm. We had some D3 pod slumps this week. Mm-hmm. We got a loaded episode here in front of us to get to. So what do you say we get chatting?
Let's get into it. Yeah.
All right. Let's rock. Fired up, like we said, to be here in studio. We appreciate those wise words from that intro there. And we are ready to dive in here for some game action. What do you say?
Let's do it. Yeah, this was an awesome week, so I'm pumped to go over what we got.
And much to D3 Nation's, disgruntlement? Is that a...
I think that's a good one. Yeah, sure. Good term.
The big dog and I have been in the studio today. We got in the lab.
Mm-hmm.
We had the film cracking up, and we are fired up to go ahead and review all these games.
Oh, it was an awesome weekend. I can't believe we got to see so much, too. It was great. So many teams played. So many great games. I don't want to spoil too much, but what a weekend. Wow.
Well, with all that said, why don't you take me down the path of where you want to start, and we'll just let it all fly.
All right. Do you want to start with the big dog, the heavy hitter? One that the people were talking about? The one that's on our board?
Seems like a good intro to A, the board, and B, that we are recording.
Perfect. All right. Well, let's get right into the first one that we got, which is Muhlenberg RIT. The big dog called it. I knew it was going to be a close one, and it sure was, with RIT taking it in triple overtime, 10-9. I know this was a crazy game, Dan. I'll highlight it a little bit. We had two huge three-minute non-releasable penalties, one from each team, which we can get into more, but RIT definitely took advantage of that, scoring three goals on their three-minute non-releasable, while the Mules did not get a single goal. So that was a huge swing for RIT. But other than that, this was just like I thought, a really hard-fought, contested game, back and forth. A lot of saves, a lot of good lacrosse. Dan, are you ready to give me my flowers now? You want to wait till the end? How do we want to go about this?
I knew you were going to do some dancing on this grave, and rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
But I will be quick to remind you that there's a segment on this podcast that exists.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you ask me why Muhlenberg is in the top 30.
I did.
So I'm ready to give you some flowers on that because you had the bet right. But I'm also ready to remind you how you got to be so bullish on those Mules.
Fair. That's very fair. A lot of analytics coming from you to get that take formulated.
And where do you want to start? Should we start with more giving flowers, but except instead of giving them to us, we'll give them to Muhlenberg?
To the correct people? Yeah, I guess that's a good place to start. I guess they should get some of the credit, too. And if you want to start with that, that's great. I think the best place to start is going the person that stood out to me the most. It's got to be Max May.
I had a feeling that 100%. Was where you'd start.
Oh, my gosh, dude. What a game. That guy just stood on his head throughout that whole game. It was just an excellent performance. He put on a great show and really held that RIT offense, which when you think about RIT historically, such a dominant offense, you always see them put up in the high teens, even the 20 points, especially to a team historically like Muhlenberg. So when you see them held to 10 points, that's absolutely absurd. And when you really break down that game, 8 of those points came in the first half. So you're talking about holding one of the best offensive teams in the country to 2 goals in the second half. That is absolutely crazy.
And one of them being in triple overtime.
Triple overtime is the one of the 2 goals you let in the entire half. Like, you got to give credit to that defense, and you got to give credit to Max May. absolutely stellar performance, and no way they get there without his performance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to talk a little bit about why I believe that he was in such a good position to have the game that he did.
Another layer to it.
And the defense did a excellent job, and I think that they adjusted even more throughout the game. I think there were a couple instances early, and I mean certainly not a ton, where they were perhaps a little too heavy to slide or quick to slide and ended up giving them offense. And then as the course of that game plays out, you see him hedging and holding a whole lot more. And what that does is it creates a bunch of contested shots and it creates some low angle shots. And traditionally RIT, you know, like sharp shooters, they stick those.
Yep.
But Max May was like, I mean, he was on point and very, very much so in a position to be able to eat up those contested shots and the low angle stuff. So they had to work for really high percentage shots, like the ones that you saw go. Hollinger getting to the middle of the field with his left hand, both in overtime and as their, let's see here, as their seventh goal. I actually have an RIT goal log here.
Oh.
Just to take, again, this defensive point a little bit deeper here.
Mm-hmm.
First goal, 6-on-6 goal, but it's not what I would say RIT pretty. It's a throwback situation, and the ball on the throwback basically just goes straight down.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was open enough that he's able to, like, pick the ground ball up and, like, get to the middle of the field and still score. So there's an element of, like, the 6-on-6 caused it, but it wasn't necessarily your typical, like, pretty RIT goal.
Yeah, yeah, not what we're used to seeing from them.
Then the next four are EMO.
Yep.
All very pretty, like, yeah, standard, mm-hmm. yep, with that in the second quarter.
Yep.
Then they get three more, two of which in a row are 6-on-6 goals. Third is out of the timeout, like 15 seconds left. They call timeout with possession, little two-man action, take their right hand, and then they like skip it right to top center, and Clifford Gaston hits on a bomb from like 15 yards.
Yep.
So just an absolute snipe. So three relatively good goals there. Ninth goal, rebound goal off of like a
great save.
Yeah, it's a pretty good save. It was otherwise a pretty good take.
He gets down low, makes a great save.
And the ball just pops straight to Dylan Bruno, yep, who finishes it. That's their ninth goal. And then the 10th goal is the one in triple overtime.
Yep.
So like there's an argument that RIT really scored like three or four like earned typical like standard offensive goals.
Yeah. Everything else is your transition just, or your EMO plays.
Or like kind that. Of busted, like just, it that's insane to me.
Which if you don't get that illegal stick call in Muhlenberg, like we might be talking about a different game right here where
might.
The Mules pulled out.
Might.
We would have been, yeah.
I mean, I guess you can't say for certain, right?
I guess it's all how it plays out, but wow. That changed the course of the game.
Yeah, and it's just crazy. And I got a little stat here for you. Are you all ready right, for
hit
this?
Me. Hit me.
So in the last five seasons, RIT has been held to 10 or less. This is the fourth time. So on three other occasions.
Mm-hmm.
That's Bates in 2018. York and Union both did it in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah.
Obviously, York.
Whoever that offensive coordinator was on the York team that could only score 7 goals, meanwhile the defense was grinding out stops and held them to 10, must be a total idiot and probably feels like an idiot.
I could imagine
so. I'd hate to be that guy.
Ugh, definitely not looking at him in the face right now.
Definitely not. And then again, this weekend with Muhlenberg being the fourth.
Mm.
All four of those instances of them being held to 10 or less have resulted in wins. How is that possible?
That's just, I don't even know what to say at that point.
It's like kind of mind-boggling, right?
Yeah.
It's insane. You've
got a horseshoe up your butt at that point.
It's insane. They have this like defensive magical like ability, like, all right, hey, we're offensive isn't gonna get it done. So I know everybody says that we're like this offensive powerhouse and we're just like all offense because we score all these goals, but we've been pretty good on defense here for the last few years too.
Definitely.
I know that those guys get a lot of shine, something deservingly so, but this side of the ball has been pretty good too.
And I think you had a great point pre-pod that I want you to expand on a little bit here, and that's that RIT, when we historically think of them, we always see them have the great numbers on offense, you know, such a powerhouse on the offensive end. And it really doesn't matter what they have on the defensive end, or that really doesn't shine through because the offense sells tickets. You know, that's really the big guns. And this was a game where the defense really came to play and was able to shine. And it was to your point that you talked about, they have some really great players on that defensive end and in the goal that really don't get the credit that they deserve in games like this, when they're really the ones sticking it out and winning the game for them.
Yeah, and if you think back to last year, down the stretch, three games in a row, they throw three different looks out and beat three different very good teams. So they play Bowdoin pretty straight up, like relatively like just straight 60, bit of mix of zone or whatever. The next game they play Tufts and they shut off Bradall the whole game, so they're in more of a 50 look. And then in the next game against Union, they go down 7-3, and then they start going zone for the rest of the game, and they chip away and come back and win the national championship. So it's three games in a row with three different defensive looks.
From a yeah. team where you think they're an offensive powerhouse.
Right,
you
know, yeah.
When an offensive powerhouse can throw three different successful looks at you like that, like, where do you beat them? Like, right. How do you beat them?
Right, it's crazy. It's just remarkable that they've been able to, like, counterbalance each other the way that they have.
Definitely. Yep. And, I think to this point, I think Muhlenberg definitely put themselves on the map for this game. They're definitely a team that we need to keep an eye on and a force to be reckoned with this year. But I'm not pushing the panic button if I'm RIT right now. You know, I think they did have a couple people out. I know Noah didn't play, as well as Commandant also didn't play. So maybe they get those guys back or start working them in. We see a little bit different RIT team. But I'm not too worried about it. I think this is early in the season. They're working out some kinks. They're working out some things. So don't expect this to be a full season.
And to that point, working out kinks, like, they – I don't know if it's necessarily kinks versus they're just try out different lineups to see what different looks that creates. Mm-hmm. But they played a ton of different combinations on offense. Mm-hmm. They had – I mean, it's probably the same, like – somewhere between 7 and 9 guys pretty consistently, maybe 10. But it's those 10 every possession in some sort of order, like some sort of balancing with one will go to attack, with Bruno going to attack and bouncing down, and Spencer Bell will come out for a minute. And like, they've done a lot of balancing and trying different combinations. And I don't know if I kind of think it might be, if I've been one of those players, kind of hard to get into a rhythm, like, and not necessarily, like, have the same type of chemistry that you may otherwise if you have that, like, consistent lineup. I don't know.
I think that's a good point. But I think kind of moving along from this and down the road a little bit, we're going to see that 9-10 shovel down into a 7, you know, 6-7 sort of.
Well, they can't play less than that.
Yeah, you know.
You can't just roll out the same three midfielders every possession.
No, not saying that they'll have that every time, but I think we're going to see more consistent lineups where we'll have a more clear one and a more clear two, and we'll get guys that are able to mesh with each other a little bit more in those lineups.
Yeah, and so one point there that I want to make about this team too is there's a world in which it wouldn't be crazy to me that this team is missing more than anybody else from previous teams Ryan Rosenblum as a midfielder. He's the one that, like, traditionally has been able to get downhill with speed and, like, put pressure on defenses to slide no matter what the matchup is. And that didn't happen as much in these games. Like,
I definitely didn't see anybody that really sort of commanded the defense to start moving.
Yeah, that midfield doesn't have the same pop, like, the same, like, explosiveness, particularly that Rosenblum brought to the table. And he broke his foot last year, so was kind of, you know, a hit or miss, I guess, or, like, I don't know what to describe it.
75-80%, you know, sort of deal.
No. Like, he broke his foot and missed, like, the last 60% of the season.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyways, I think that he's one of those guys that, of all of the guys on the team, he might be the one that, like, if he was injected onto this roster, you're definitely not hitting the panic button as much as you possibly could be.
Got it. That would set but you a little not. Bit more at ease. Yep. Makes sense there. But, you know, I thought this was an awesome game, and I think it truly, you know, it was a great kickoff to the year. You know, if I had to say that this was sort of the kickoff and how we start the 2023 season, this is absolutely the perfect way to do it.
Tell me more about the Mules. What'd you like?
Oh, offensively, they had a great game plan. They got so many people involved, and I think what makes them so dangerous is pretty much all six of their guys on offense that they roll out are threats. They can go to the goal and they can score, and you have to cover every single one. You can't just stick, you know, Jensen on their best player and say, we're good to go now. Like, every single one of those guys is a threat. So having to cover all those people, I think, is really tough, and that's going to be a good point for the Mules moving forward. But it's got to be the defensive end for me. That's sort of the cornerstone of this team.
Yeah.
Max is just insane. If he can play like that all year long, I mean, we're talking, you know, All-American accolades. We're talking deep run for the Mules, and we're definitely talking about big dogs, big takes coming true.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to look up his name. I'm blanking off the top of my head. But number 9 for them, the defender from Muhlenberg, is tough. He brings a lot to the table for them. I think the other guys are, like, big and long and athletic. In general, they're a very big athletic team. Really, what they remind me of is Union from last year.
Mm. Yeah, that's
but
a great point.
But not quite as deep. Mm-hmm. The difference between that Union team and this Muhlenberg team is the number of guys that Union team played last year and face-off play. Face-off play for that Union team was very good. This Muhlenberg team, if like we were to sit here and nitpick and try and pick out flaws, that might be where I landed for Muhlenberg.
Yeah, I think it was right around the 18 to 22 mark, right around there. But RIT pretty much dominated the faceoff X in this point. So moving forward, if Muhlenberg is going to, you know, continually be a team that's talked about in this RIT sort of world, they're going to have to figure out what's going on at the X and, you know, get that right.
Yeah, and then one point to make about that depth is James Dalamonte, their top midfielder, didn't even play in this game. I think he probably makes a goal difference.
I think so, too.
Yeah, and so, I mean, quite frankly, both of these teams obviously can play. Muhlenberg is going to be in the top 20 for me. I think I've seen enough to realize that, like, if I was to put two teams on a neutral field, Muhlenberg and blank, there's a lot of teams I'm taking Muhlenberg over versus what we versus blank in the top 20 and furthermore in the top 30.
Definitely, yep. I think that's a good point. And I think one more final point I need to make on this before we keep this going here is maybe what could have caused the game. I'm not too sure, but you know, this is a tight triple overtime game, right? You're talking about grit. You're talking about tenacity here. You're talking about, you know, the team that wants it more is going to win this game. I saw, just rough estimate here, you know, probably 15 to 20 guys on Muhlenberg wearing tights on Saturday.
You didn't like that.
You know how many RIT players I saw?
I mean,
with
they
tights?
Had jackets on the sideline.
RIT?
Yeah.
But just their injured players. Just the injured players.
No.
And just the goalies
That's
wore sweats.
That's incorrect.
No, I saw it. I was watching it. I got the film. I can show you. But you know how many players wore tights? How many tights were out on the field? I'll tell you. It was zero. So,
could that be the difference?
In a one-goal game, triple overtime, who wants it more?
You're never going to like any of the Centennial teams if tights is your big bugaboo.
I mean, it's just a sign of weakness. You don't need to wear tights.
I thought you were going to say something else, which would be a great lead-in to our WNL York segment here.
I didn't see any tights.
Would you like me to take it away?
Go for it.
So this is where our Karma on You game comes in here. Because RIT, I think you could make an argument, ended up winning it because they have all these experienced dudes that never blinked and fought through the adversity. And our Spartans had all these inexperienced dudes that ended up being a little bit panicked and definitely got real tight in the second half.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know exactly how much of this I'm going to blame on you, but there's at least a significant portion.
I deserve some of it. You're right. You're right. It was a tough take, you know, questioning their leadership ability. It was tough.
Also, the math is in. Between the RIT captains, I believe there's somewhere between 30 and 33 years of experience because they have 6 dudes that are all graduate students.
Good. Okay. All right. Well, maybe
the data is in.
I can slowly walk that take back week over week here. But yeah, you know, they definitely grounded that out because of their tough leadership. And, you know, moving into this York game, that's definitely something that they maybe wish they had back, losing a lot of people.
Maybe Noah
is the difference maker in that game where, you know, he knows the right play to make at the end of the game.
There's perhaps an argument that if you took like just about any of the dudes that graduated from that team last year, which, like, this is a stupid argument, but if you took basically any of them, Kennedy, Smith, Wolf, Reynolds, Bruno, I'm missing, but Michael.
Yeah.
Perhaps that game ends up in the old Sparty's direction.
I think you might be right there, Dan, which it was tough to see. It was a sad one. We can get into it here.
Yeah, it's time to give some props to the Generals, as much as I know you may not like to do that.
Yeah, you know, definitely got to give some props to the Generals. They had a great game plan. You know, I think they worked the ball.
I love that you mixed in some.
It is some. You'll hear why in a second here, but I think they had a great game plan. They got the ball to their goal scorers in opportunistic areas, and they put the ball away. They took their chances and ran with them. So, not taking anything away from the Generals here, I think they played a near perfect game, which is what they needed to do to beat the Spartans. But I am going to say
a near perfect second half.
Second half, yeah, okay. Yeah. First half was definitely favored in the Spartans' direction, which is what we were expecting, which I think if you look at the talent on both of the rosters is kind of where it should go. I think Spartans have a little bit more of a talented roster, but it's not all just about talent, it's about execution. And what the Spartans have in talent, they lacked heavily in execution on Saturday. We saw a lot of sloppy offense. We saw a lot of mistransition opportunities. I think I was sitting there and I just counted like 5, 6, 7 off the top of my head times the ball went out of bounds off the back end line just from missed passes or deflected passes.
When this game ended, I was sweating and bleeding.
Bleeding? What were you bleeding from?
I don't know. That's the thing of it. I don't know when or why I started bleeding, but at some point I did. And it was pretty profuse.
Oh, man. I need to get like Dr. Jones up here or something.
Yeah.
Stitch you up right.
We might need to do some sort of like Eagle Cam.
Oh, yeah.
Watch party in here.
Yeah.
Maybe for Wednesday's York Your Sinus.
That would be a fun one. Who knows? A little sneak
float it out.
Yeah. That would be fun. But yeah, back to the Spartans. I think this was more of a loss on their end than it was a Generals win. Generals played great, but just all the errors on the Spartans' end really killed them. And I do think it's sort of a product of an early February game, mid February game, early in the season. If you are going to have issues like this, this is the time to have it. I don't think it was a game plan, and it wasn't something from the Spartans where they game planned incorrectly or the players didn't have enough talent to hold their own. I really just think it was all about the execution and lack thereof for York. So I think the ship can be righted with the Spartans, but they do have a lot of work to do. But to that point, we were talking about it earlier. If you are going to drop a game like this as a top 5-10 team,
yes,
you want that game to be out of conference.
Yep.
You want that game to be early.
Yep.
And you want that game to be away.
Yep, and out of region, specifically. Not just away. I mean, away against an out-of-region opponent.
Yeah, yep. And the Spartans checked all four of those boxes in this loss. So
yeah,
as tough as it is to see them lose, I don't think that this is sort of a backbreaker. And, with the play, I'm not pushing the panic button yet. I do think this is something, they can get back into practice, get the stick skills right. Come Wednesday night, we could see a completely different Spartans team.
Yeah. All right. That's a good take. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. What did you see, though?
No, I think you were pretty much hit the nail on the head. Very evenly critical while also critically optimistic is how I'd describe that segment right there.
Okay. I'll take that.
Seems fair, right?
Yeah.
I'll add another extra bit here if that's all right for you.
Yeah.
I think if there's one thing that concerned me the most, similar to what I was saying about RIT, that like pop in the midfield, I think York could use some pop in the midfield. And I don't know like exactly where you find it. Maybe it's, somebody that maybe you do some mixing around. Like, I don't know exactly what it is, mm-hmm. but finding a little flair, adding a little pop to that first line midfield, or just getting a little bit more out of those guys. And perhaps it just means Jay Willie, who was like pretty visibly hobbled. Like, there's times out there where he's like limping around. There's once where like he takes a bad step and like literally is like limping to get to the box, and then he comes running back out there for the next possession, which credit to his toughness and like fighting through it.
Yeah.
But he didn't have much pop, you know. So I don't know exactly where you find it or how you inject it, but that's what Cap's prescribing, a little pop to the midfield.
A little pop, yep. And I think we saw that, you know, Ben Mayer got his for sure, but we did see that lack of production from the midfield.
And down the stretch, Dubnyk was prepared for it, did a good job extending and making his touches tough to get, and, you know, York just threw it to him anyways.
Yep, they game-planned well, and York, you know, tried to fight through it and just didn't have enough in the end. But tough to see it on, but the Spartans do get to come back and play Wednesday, which we'll get into the review in a little bit here.
Preview.
Into the preview in a little bit here. But we'll keep on going, and we'll hit Coast Guard, RPI. This was an OT game, which saw Coast Guard pulling it out the very end, 12-11. I did get to catch some of this. I know you caught it, too. We were watching it together in the office here before we jumped in the studio. I'll throw you my quick thoughts, and then you can kind of hit me with a little bit of more knowledge, because I know you got a little bit more.
Before you do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I really wish that I had some sort of video on you, because I knew it was coming. I should have been more prepared for the moment of overtime when the stream cuts out and just picks back up and Coast Guard is like streaming onto the field, like celebrating.
We were both sitting there like, all right, here we go. Here's OT.
I knew it was coming.
Oh, it was so sad. If anybody does have a clip of that that OT goal, please shoot it over to us. We would love to see it.
Yeah, please. We have not seen it. It was not on the broadcast.
Yeah, it did miss the cut. My only big takeaway from this was I wasn't too impressed with what RPI, you know, brought out. I think last year, the beginning of the season, that is when they took out RIT, which, you know, was their only loss last year. So this is a team that I expect to come out kind of hot right from the start and beat these teams early. So for them to drop an OT loss to Coast Guard first thing in the season does make me a little bit concerned for them. And hopefully this isn't the case, but I could kind of maybe see in a team that drops down out of the top 20, maybe even close to out of the top 30 range.
Yeah, so how quickly do they drop, though?
I mean,
how drastically? I guess another segment of this question is, how good did you think Coast Guard was, right? Like, if Coast Guard is 50th, then RPI got to go pretty far.
Mm-hmm.
If Coast Guard is 25th, RPI doesn't have to go that far. Which, so I think that has to be part of the equation, right?
To my point, where hit me with some facts. Tell me what you know about Coast Guard.
Oh.
Yeah.
You're sending that back on me. I like it.
And then I can get a little more of a informed take here.
Yeah, I am actually pretty glad to school you up here a little bit on Coast Guard, because I think they're pretty good. I think that Caleb Holdridge, I've continued to mention, is a stud. I legitimately think he starts at 99.9, if not 100% of rosters in Division III.
That's a name you've brought up quite frequently this
year. Yeah, I think this is Pod 3, and he's now three featured mentions here. And then he had three goals in the game winner in this game in overtime, which we haven't seen. But I digress. And Coast Guard comes out on fire out of the half. They win that third quarter 6-0, go on a big time run. And they're athletic. They play pretty fast. They don't like shy away from, you know, contact or anything like that. And then RPI goes down as having 30 turnovers, and Coast Guard's credited with causing 17 of them. So they get out, and Matt Lubin is an athletic dude. He's credited with 3 calls turnovers. Like, they just have. Like, I don't mean to go full PFT here, but they just have guys.
Yeah.
They got guys.
Bunch of guys.
Yeah. And Caleb Holdridge is a guy that would play.
He might be a dude.
He's a dude.
Yeah.
He's a dude. He plays for 99% of teams in D3.
Wow. Awesome. All right. Well, I guess they really are a team to watch here coming down as the season gets going here a little bit.
Yeah. And it's funny. Like, before the season started, Kinnear and I did a little brainstorm on – like, interesting potential features. And the first thing I said was Coast Guard. Like, I'd be interested just to learn more. Like, I don't know. Is it the same, like, prestigiousness? Like, have you ever been there? Or, like,
No,
like,
never.
Navy is, like, sweet to go to. West Point is, like, sweet to go to, you know? Like, I don't know if it has the same, like, ring to it. Like, I'd be interested to learn more about Coast Guard and the program.
Definitely, yeah. And I think they're doing some great things with the lacrosse program.
A couple years ago, somebody sent me a message, and it was a video of a former Coast Guard lacrosse player like making a high risk save, like at sea. Like,
oh, wow.
Like there's a boat and it's like capsized or whatever. And like mm-hmm. a former Coast Guard lacrosse player is like jumping out of a helicopter to go like save these people. Like, wow. It's pretty incredible.
Just goes to show, you know, like these people that play, these kids that play, you know, at
D3
these
Lacs, like, man.
D3 Lacs. That's,
yeah.
That's huge. And they're going on to do great things. That's awesome.
Yeah. And we're sitting here talking about podcasts, eating Chipotle.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, like
living the life.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, so like I said, pretty interested to see exactly where Coast Guard goes and if they can continue to stack a few wins on top of this one and make a run at the new Mac.
Yeah, yeah, that would be awesome to see. So they might definitely be a team that we see on, you know, your top 30, you know, maybe even crossing that top 20 threshold. Who knows? But another couple teams that are on that top 20 list that we're going to see some movement on this week is Ursinus and Stevenson. They met. Some people did claim it to be a preview of the national championship for D3. I don't know if I would go that far. But it was a great game, and we saw a lot of good stuff. But Ursinus did end up taking it at home 14-11 against Stevenson. What were your takeaways here? What did you see? I have, you know, my own thoughts, which I'm a little bit, you know, skewed away from Stevenson. But what were your thoughts? I know you had Stevenson ranked pretty high before this matchup.
Thank you for that lead-in.
Yeah, just had to remind you.
Yeah, I did have them really high, and there were a whole lot of people that were like, what an idiot, buying stock into Stevenson. And I said, screw you guys. You know what? Like, I'm looking at this roster. They're experienced. They're athletic. They are a group that's been together for years. Like, they should be farther along in their chemistry and connectivity and this, that, and the other. And said all of these nice things about Stevenson, right?
They
you can
great.
Back me up. That happened.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Okay, well, I'm prepared to be about a 50 out of 10 mean to Stevenson.
Maybe if you're a Stevenson fan, you might want to mute this part real quick.
Well, I'm not fully going to go there because this is a place of business.
Okay.
And I want to go on Saturday night to the CNU-Stevenson game under the lights, which I think you should
True.
Try and...
I would love to join
you. I think you should try and clear your schedule and get there with me. That would be fun.
That would be great.
Yeah, so remind me later, maybe tomorrow, to send a message over there. I'll see what we can do.
Yeah.
And on that note, I'm not going to go full 50 out of 10 mean.
Okay, all right, fair. Yep. Please invite us to cover your game next week, Stevenson.
But I am going to go about a 7 out of 10 mean.
That's fair.
Which seems fair, right?
Yeah,
100%
fair.
Only fair because I gave him so much credit at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I have one word written here on this outline. You want to know what it is?
What is it?
Puke.
Ooh.
It's the word puke.
Yep.
Like, gosh, they just do so much. Like, watching this game specifically on replay with like all of the antics and like palms up and trash talk and stuff like that, like, it just drives me crazy. It does. It really does. And then your sign is like also very chatty and like chirpy and like,
oh,
I get it.
No saints by any means.
Yeah. And like, I get it. And like, this happens, but like, it's just like so extra, I feel like, every single time with these guys.
Definitely. Yep. I think this was definitely a game that, you know, you talked a lot about Stevenson, how many returning players they have and how well they mesh together. So I'm coming into this game expecting to see, you know, a really great unit on both the offensive and defensive side of the ball. And the whole first quarter, what was Stevenson's game plan? It was get the ball to one guy, let that guy ISO. Maybe he shoots from 12 and scores. Maybe he doesn't. Most of the time he didn't. And I just wasn't impressed. You know, that's you know, not great ball. That's not what you want to see. You want to see all six guys moving it and being a threat. And it was just kind of get the guy ball into one guy's stick and maybe he can make a play. So I was really high on them. I was buying everything you were saying, but I just did not see it against this.
I sold a truth that didn't come true.
It's okay, but you know, I think some of it does have to do with what we talked about last
week. Can it
week.
Be early season jitters? Is that possible for a group with that much experience?
So I don't know if I'd chalk it up as much to early season jitters, just because, like you were saying, they are so experienced, and you know, this definitely should have been a game that they came out and dominated. But I do think maybe not dominated, but they should have.
Hey, if anybody's getting flowers, I'm giving them to myself for going with my instinct on Ursinus and like specifically with the top 20, like
yeah.
putting them in and that's, putting a little bet on, you know, a young coaching staff that like
they're doing some fun things
you and know? Has a team that plays pretty loose. And I also like it's time to get Tyler Neal flowers too.
Oh, he deserves them 100%.
It's time to give Tyler Neal flowers too.
Yeah, he deserves them 100%. But I think, you know, this was definitely a game that Ursinus just came out and dominated from start to finish. They had the better game plan. It seemed like they were coached up well. They knew how to execute what Stevenson was going to do on offense. And when they got the ball on offense, they just had no answers for that Ursinus defense. So I do think that's credit to, you know, Mark Pouse and the coaching staff that they have going to get them prepped and get them up for this game. And it just kind of does make me very worried about Stevenson that, you know, they kind of are going to be more one, you know, not very dynamic, one move and go and just sort of work the ball yeah. through one guy, which I don't think is going to be great offense.
Yeah, and your sign is definitely did dictate the game. This game finished and they had the statistical edge in goals, shots, turnovers, calls, turnovers, faceoffs won, and ground balls. Mm. Like, that's definitely not a recipe here. So taking that another bit further, Stevenson finished it with a -6 face-off differential, 4 penalties, 8 failed clears, and only went 1-4 EMO. Mm-hmm. Not a winning recipe. And, like, you know, it was just – I can't believe I'm going to say it, but I was disappointed after having high expectations for Stevenson.
Right. That's not something I thought I'd hear you say.
Yeah, and to all the people on FanLax that were like, oh, can't wait to see them drop – you got your wish.
There you go. It's definitely coming. But plenty of time to right the ship. Plenty of time to keep it going. We're going to keep going as well. Moving right down the list. We got Christopher Newport, Grove City. This was an electric first half. Absolutely electric. Christopher Newport did end up running away as we expected in the second half to make it 23-11 as the final. My quick takeaways from this, Dan, electric first half. Gladstone is the real deal. He's a player. And I'm nervous for CNU, especially on the defensive end.
That's a big take.
Tell me
more about that. So you're buying that Grove City exposed something in CNU.
I do think so. You know, I don't think this is indicative of the full year. You know, I don't think CNU's in giant trouble and, you know, should be smashing the panic button by any means right now. But I do think that Grove City offense is you know, pretty dynamic, especially with Gladstone out there. So you do have to, you know, kind of work around covering him and covering their other guys. And so what I saw in this game was Gladstone got his early on, and they made the switch to kind of take that away, which is, you know, what you're supposed to do. But then after that, you really don't expect the role players on Grove City to kind of have the day that they did. Which is where I was expecting the CNU defense to kind of step it up and sort of take that game over, which I didn't see. There was one in particular. There was a step down from about 12, 13 yards out. Great shot, by the way, but Hanway just lets it in, and it keeps Grove City on a run. I think it might actually tie it around 7 or something at that point. But that's just one where, you know, your senior All-American goalie, you really expect him to come up and make that save there. So I do think we're starting to see the holes in the CNU team and where they can be exposed. And I think the goalie position is definitely one that can be exposed, but as well as the defense. You know, we saw Wayne, he's now gone, so they have that void to fill. And Hanway, I think he's kind of benefited from a lot of good defense over the past few years. So now that he has to step up and be kind of that centerpiece, I don't see him, you know, kind of fulfilling that as much as they have in the past. So we'll be interesting to see where they move on. It's, you know, everything we're talking about still is early on. There's plenty of times to fix it and right the ship. But, you know, just based off this weekend, I am a little nervous for CNU. I think they got some questions on defense that they're going to have to answer.
Yeah, I, once again, would be not so much hitting the panic button. I think Windhelm and Young are both pretty dang good at down at close for them. And I think they get some pretty good short stick D-mid play between Aiden Wheeler and Campbell Posen. And really, they have traditionally been able to roll out a handful of guys in that spot. I think I'm more buying that Grove City is pretty slick.
Yeah.
Which is where I thought you were going to go from the start. But Zachary Hogan, the left-handed attackman for Grove City, he is like a 50-point player on a pretty even clip. I don't remember exactly what it was off the top of my head, but pretty even clip. He's like a 50-point scorer from last year. Really slick left-handed attackman. And they're a bit undersized. Like, they definitely aren't going to go out. And if CNU and Grove City had to settle some sort of dispute at midfield in some sort of brawl fashion, I think CNU would have won that thing by potentially more than the margin that they won the actual game by. But case in point being that Grove City may not be the most, like, physically imposing group, but they're pretty quick and they're pretty slick. And I thought it showed in, you know, the ball moves quick on every field that you ever play on if the ball moves quick anywhere, you know? Like,
yep.
That's something that translates anywhere you go against any team, as long as you can kind of do what you need to do to be able to get your hands free and put a little pressure on the defense to rotate or draw eyes, so on and so forth. And they did that, at least in the first half. And then the second half,
A little bit of a different story.
CNU defense came out and kind of sunk their teeth in there, buddy.
Just a little bit, and then, you know, to my point of a dominant defense, I think that in the second half they came out and showed more of that defensive know-how and experience. So was impressed with the second half, but do want to see them put a full 60 minutes together. And real quick, do want to shout out, it was Griffin Agawa who made that that giant goal there for Grove City. So shout out Griffin, great shot there.
Yeah, and that was a pretty ridiculous play. It all starts with an awesome back check that sends a stick flying, ground ball go the other way. And that's, like I said, that's one of the spots where, like, the stick skills and ability to push transition show.
Yep, definitely. It was a great game for Grove City. Want to see them continue to build off of this.
Yeah, and, I mean, they definitely get some, like, not lucky, but they capitalize on some unsettled and, like, scramble situations and so on and so forth in the first half, but, like, again, they have the sticks to be able to capitalize on those situations, which is at least noteworthy, you know.
You know, putting up 11 points against an Elite Eight team from the previous year is an impressive feat. So something that should be discussed. But going right down the list here, next game that we had, this was a pretty good game. We had St. Vincent take on OWU.
Yeah, and this is a traditional power going down to non-traditional power.
Yep. With St. Vincent.
A rising power.
Yep. On the precipice of greatness, St. Vincent. Ooh. 11-8.
Yep.
Dan, you saw most of this one.
Yeah.
What do you got?
Yeah, I got the rewatch in on this one. OWU shoots 8 of 45, so that probably isn't much of a recipe for winning games. 45 shots, decent recipe. Maybe you want to get a bit more than that. I don't know. I'd have to do some digging to come up with whatever the average was. I'd be interested to see what RIT's average is, which that would be obviously on the high side, but national champions back-to-back, that might have to be the bar.
Real quick, you know, I did see the box score for this game, and me, I love my goalies. 17 saves from the St. Vincent goalie.
Which is certainly part of the 8 of 45.
Yeah, but so were you seeing, was it the shot selection? Was
combination of both. I mean, he's good. OWU doesn't necessarily, like, have the same patience to, like, work super deep into possessions and come up with, like, super high percentage looks. So, like, it's not like he's just gobbling up all these, like, skips to step downs or, like, on the crease, but he makes a high quality, like, he makes a certain percentage of high quality saves and then pretty much gobbles up all the ones that you'd expect him to on top of it, you know.
Awesome. Okay.
So, like, pretty dang good performance there. And then I think that I've decided I'm going to go on one personal anecdote per episode.
Okay.
This is where this one comes in for this week.
Okay. Love your anecdotes, so hit
me. Thank you. Caleb Hawkins.
Another great name.
Yeah, Caleb. 100-point milestone, and he is he's one of my former own.
Oh.
I coached him. Yeah, I coached him in club ball. Yeah, and
so you can take credit for some of those points, right?
I would never do that.
Oh, okay. All right.
But he would
maybe like 10 of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I would never do that. But he wouldn't be where he is without me.
There you go. There you go.
I'm just kidding. He's an awesome kid. I really liked coaching him, so it was cool to see that pop up. I kind of, I mean, total transparency, like I lost track, like didn't really know that he was there. Mm-hmm. And then it popped up that he had 5 points in this game and passed the career 100-point mark, and I was like, holy crap, that's awesome.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was pretty cool. And that's where my personal anecdote of the episode comes in.
Great anecdote. Love them. Keep them coming every week.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that – and then this is, again, I don't know which game we were talking about it, but, like, dictating the tempo. St. Vincent dictates the tempo of this game, and, like, they're leading for the big bulk of this game. They're – up 7-4 in the middle of the third, and then Owu goes on a nice run to come back. But, like, that's their surge, you know? Then St. Vincent answers it and goes on a surge of their own, wins the fourth quarter, and then takes it 11-8. So, like, it's got to be a pretty cool feeling for those guys.
Definitely, yeah. Maybe a little bit of a shift in power out
yeah.
there.
Yeah, one of them tweeted at me after. I was like, look at the upset, and they were like, this is expected for us, brother. Mm. I'm like, that's cool, you know?
Love that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
want to be there.
Have some confidence, man. Play with a little chip on your shoulder and have some freaking fun while you upset all these teams that, like, I mean, Owu is...
They're historically yeah, exactly. a great team. Yeah. Yeah. They've taken down Salisbury, you know, once or twice.
Yeah, sure. Take some freaking pride in beating those guys, you know? Like, that's cool.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, great game there. Moving on to maybe one that wasn't so much of a great game, Lynchburg-St. Mary's.
Yeah.
I know I caught a majority of this one. Did you see?
I did.
See much of this?
We can be quick through this one. I don't think we need to spend a ton of time on it. But
I do think I need to point out how wrong I maybe was last week. I think that's fair. If I do get a bunch of credit today for being so right about RIT Muhlenberg, I can be a little bit wrong about my St. Mary's take and how I thought their offense might be a little bit better this year.
Yeah.
After losing Jude.
Yeah, that was,
you know...
I'm prepared for the backtrack.
Yeah.
I've been prepared for the backtrack.
Similar to the RIT take, might have to try to walk this one back a little bit week over week. But, yeah, there just was not much production from the St. Mary's offense.
I will say it's almost like – and now hear me out on this one. Mm-hmm. But it's almost like that offense would have been a bit better if they had one of D3's best Dodgers on it.
Like maybe like a Jude Brown. Super dynamic attackman that's like sick. You make a pretty good point.
the reason that I have this on the old outline here, though, is we got to talk a little bit about Lynchburg and their debut.
Yes. No, I did want to make a good point that, you know, besides the fact that St. Mary's didn't really come to play, this was the Lynchburg team that we expected to see. This was the Lynchburg team that I talked about overperforming when we talked about your top 30 in the beginning of the year, where I said Coach Kadelka and Lynchburg team does not have two down seasons.
What do you like so much about them?
They just gelled so much on offense. They were humming. The boys were moving. Their transition game was great. But on top of all that, I just think they got a stud now in the goal.
You like Hadley.
Oh, I love me some Hadley. He's been playing great lately, and I feel like this year, more than the previous years, he's really commanding the defense now.
Yeah, well, this is his first year that he's come in as the starter, knowing that he's the guy, like it's been his job for the bulk of the season, if not from the very, very get-go. I don't, you know, obviously totally know, but...
Mm-hmm. And I think last year what we saw when he came in and out quite a bit was he made some great saves and was a great player, but he just didn't have that command of the defense, that leadership that you want your goalie to
have.
Yeah,
he started the second half of the season or so, and to your point, and before that, I this may be a misquote. Sometimes I make things up.
No, that's fair.
But I think that the season before that, he was on the club team at Lynchburg.
Oh, wow, okay.
So
I remember you saying something about that too.
So yeah, you go from the club team to the backup to mid-year starter to now full-year starter. Like, if that's your progression, I gotta imagine your confidence going into the year has to be in a drastically different place.
Going up and up and up.
Yeah,
and not only your confidence, but the team's confidence in
and
you,
and like the experience under your belt, like allowing you to step in and really just be cool, calm, and composed and stuff in there, too.
Definitely. You know? And I think this was, one of the first real games where I saw that out of him, and he was really composed and just held the whole defense together. And there was a big proponent and reason why they only let up five goals.
I yelped like a dog getting stepped on when the short stick D-mid for Lynchburg rolls his ankle over in the beginning of the game.
Uh-huh. That was a tough one to see.
Oh.
Yeah.
I literally, like, I won't make the noise that I made into the mic right now as a risk of, like, blowing everything up, but it was not a pretty noise.
Yeah, I could imagine so.
Ugh.
But just to, you know, my point, we're going to get into it. Like, Salisbury, let's 10, Scranton score 10, CNU, let's Grove City get 11 on them. Like, good teams and good defenses, like, they hold stout throughout the whole game. And that's what we saw with Lynchburg today. You know, it maybe wasn't the best team, but they only gave up 5 goals, which is what you're supposed to do. So I'm impressed with Lynchburg. I'm buying everything they got right now, and I think we're going to see them maybe rise a little bit in that top 20 ranking.
Mm-hmm. Well, this seems like a good point to kind of get into some of the decision-making that went into top 20 and top 30. Mm. And we're recording this here on Monday night. I don't 100% know exactly what the top 30 is going to be, so we can't, like, dive into it the way that perhaps we will be able to in the future. But the top 20 is out, and I will say that the precedent has been set that I am rewarding teams that have played, which may come at the expense of teams that haven't played. But when you run the risk of losing, you know,
yep,
you have to have some sort of reward for winning as well.
Exactly.
Like, you can't just be ignored. And there's obviously some sort of, like, grace to it. Like, we're not going to go dropping Tufts down, you know, to 15 because they haven't played. Meanwhile, there's 15 teams that have played. You know, there's still an element of, like, when it comes down to making switches, sometimes it's, you know, would this team beat this team? You know, and, like,
we can only go off the data that we have.
And there's some sort of element of that, but there's also needs to be some sort of weight towards teams that have played, you know, and, like, Salisbury currently has a plus, I don't know, 30, probably maybe 40 something differential between their three games. Like, that has to be rewarded, mm-hmm. you know, versus a Tufts team that hasn't played yet, and it's not their fault. It's just, like, location, geography, conference rules, whatever, so on so forth. Like, it's not their fault, mm-hmm. but it's also not Salisbury's fault that that Tufts hasn't played either.
Exactly. Yep. And we need to reward Salisbury for, you know,
there needs to be something, you know, like,
exactly.
And yeah. So, if you are a top 30 reader, which you can't be that stringent on because there's only ever been one, but number two is coming out, but yeah, when that comes out, if you're listening to this, just understand that that was at least a piece of the puzzle to how everything was shaped together.
Definitely. I think it makes sense, and coming down the weeks, once everybody gets some more games in, I think we'll that list will shake out and be a little bit more accurate.
Yeah. Let's keep this bad boy moving. What do you say?
Let's do it. Yeah. And talking so much about Salisbury, you want to just get into their game?
Yeah, I don't have a whole ton of takes. They're really good. Jack Dowd is playing at a player of the year level. That's a no doubt take right there. Like, not spicy take, very lukewarm take. Jack Dowd probably should have been one of the player of the year preseason candidates. Actually, I don't know that I'm willing, like, I don't have buyer's remorse necessarily on not having him in on that, mm-hmm. but if the season ended tomorrow or we were ready to roll out mid-year All-Americans after four games or quarter of the year All-Americans or eighth year All-Americans, whatever we're at,
yeah,
Jack Dowd probably is the player of the year.
Definitely. Yep. I think that's, you can't make a case for anybody else over him in my mind right now.
Yeah. I mean, he's just been dominant. And he's added this element of, like, lefty on the run to his game. And I've said it on here a couple times and on social media, like, he's a super underrated feeder, like, really, really underrated feeder. And you got to slide to him because when you don't, he makes you pay.
Yep.
And he can packs it from range. So, like, he's got a lot going for him right now. He's been playing at, like, a totally different level. When you do a good job on cross, Jude Brown hits you. When you do a good job on Jude Brown, Cross Rara hits you. Like, they just have a multitude of options over there.
There's too many guys.
Yeah, so, like, they're pretty much rolling right now. Scranton, I think, is pretty good too. Like great, they put up a fight. Chris Crapanzano, who's going to be spending his fifth year at Albany, I believe, is a player similar to what I was saying about Caleb Holdridge. Mm-hmm. Crapanzano plays on every team in Division III. Crapanzano, mm-hmm. if he was wearing a Salisbury jersey, still gets on the field yesterday. Mm-hmm. So they've got some things going for them too. They're pretty slick at attack. They're going to be, you know, fun to watch and see if they can continue to take advantage of games like this and turn this into being like particularly competitive in the Landmark this year and pushing for a title.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. To your point, I think Salisbury right now, from what we've seen, is the most dynamic offense in D3. I think game planning against all the teams that we've talked about so far, Salisbury makes me the most concerned on wondering how to stop them just because the sheer amount of guys that they have. So that's where I'm at with their offense. Defensively, still a little bit skeptical on.
I like that point.
Oh, you know, great point.
That was a good one.
But defensively, still a little bit skeptical on them. I know.
Doesn't make sense to me.
It's fine. I know this was a lot of. I watched the film. I promise you.
I know.
There was a lot of transition goals, a lot of unsettled things. But we just talked about it. All right, a great team like Lynchburg only lets up 5 goals when playing great an inferior. Like
Salisbury and Lynchburg are going to play.
I know, and I'm probably like 2 weeks. They're probably Salisbury's probably going to crush them, actually, and I'm going to have to eat crow. But
they typically do. I got to double check on that. Make sure that that's not somehow a game that has sneaked off the radar.
Yeah, but just to this point, you know,
You got to convince me. I'll give you elevator pitch 1 minute. Convince me that I shouldn't be sold that Salisbury's defense is a top 5 unit in the country.
Great defenses hold inferior opponents to low scores. Okay. Salisbury's defense has given up 10 points now, and I think almost every game. I don't have their full schedule up, but that's way too many points for what should be a championship caliber defense. You know, when they go up against an RIT or a Tufts, who we haven't even seen play yet, I'm very nervous to see how that defense holds out. Against those sort of teams, because when they're playing teams like Scranton, like, no offense, that's not the same sort of caliber that RIT is going to bring to the table. March 4th, there you go. That'll be a good day. But, you know, that's just not the same caliber that these top teams are going to bring to the table. So how is their defense going to react when they play, you know, a real team that has a lot of talent on the offensive end? I'm a little bit skeptical of it right now.
I'm way more skeptical of Lynchburg being able to rack up numbers against Salisbury than I am that Salisbury's defense isn't good.
I'm not going to say that Lynchburg's going to win that game, but I'm telling you that Lynchburg is going to score more than 12 points.
That sounds like
15. I'm going to go with 15 points.
That sounds like we need to put that on the week. I think that would be week 4. We get next weekend. Yeah, week 4.
Week 4. Okay.
Yeah, the over under for how many goals Lynchburg scores on Salisbury in week 4.
I would just take a total and I would set the line at like 31 and I just expect a blowout game.
I'm saying how many goals Lynchburg scores.
Okay. All
right. Single.
Then I'm putting the line at 15 and we're setting it there.
You already set it at 12.
I'm going higher. I'm that confident.
You're a madman. Are you ready to move to the Centennial Conference madness?
Oh, it was some madness.
There's going to be a lot of Centennial Conference haters that listen to this podcast tomorrow or Wednesday and hate this.
I know. They're not going to be too happy.
You might be one of them.
You think?
Yeah.
Well, let's get into it and see.
All right. So Dickinson beat Stevens 13-6. Mm-hmm. Interesting game. They're actually trailing 5-4 going into the half. But I remember, like, at halftime it hit, and, like, taking a look at the stats.
Yeah, you texted me about the stats at halftime.
Yeah, and being like,
the score was off.
Can basically just imagine that the score is going to even out these stats for the rest of the in the rest of the half, and then that kind of happens. I forget exactly what it is. I think it's like a 6-0 quarter to start. Maybe it's not quite that. Yeah, 6-0 quarter, I think, to start the half for the third quarter for Dickinson. And they just kind of, like, roll out of the half. It's interesting. They give up five assisted goals in the first. And then they kind of just settle in. I feel like it was almost as if they were just like, overeager and like overzealous and were just like flying all over the place, which ended up allowing like all of these extra opportunities that Stevens was able to take advantage of. And then that kind of just like evened out. And then Dickinson owned the X. I think it was 21 of 23 that he won, or 18 of 21, something along those lines, like total domination. And then he had 16 ground balls himself too. So just like winning it directly to himself. And that's John McKee at the X for Dickinson. So definitely interesting to watch there. I need to go back and get a little bit more eyes on that defense. Again, this was a game that I was watching and like had eyes on. But based on the stats, like I could just kind of, it just kind of seemed like, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like it would have taken like a very uncharacteristic type of collapse that like for all of those like experienced guys that they're returning, it would have taken a lot of like weird stuff to happen, I think, for that result not to have ended up evening out.
Definitely. Yep. They dominated that whole box score. So kind of ended up the way we thought, but definitely surprising first half where I was like, whoa, what's going on here? But
yep.
Shook out the way we thought.
And then Dickinson, WAC, F&M, Gettysburg, Swarthmore, and perhaps is it, but all of them come out and like dominate in their first matchups. Not all against great opponents, mm-hmm. but every single one of them won by like a pretty significant margin. Including Swarthmore, who loves to make sure that I don't forget them.
Nope, they're a great squad too. Yep.
And they beat Widener 17-9, so pretty impressive result. And
yeah.
Again, the MAC did not have a good day. That was York, Eastern, Stevenson, Widener, and did I say Eastern already?
Yep.
That's five teams right there.
Yeah.
So all five of those teams lost. And I think that's probably the top five teams in the conference. I think maybe Messiah might be able to sneak up and get into that five this year. I don't totally know for sure. They've apparently had some transfers come in with some talent, so perhaps they sneak in. So I'll say that it's five of the top seven without a doubt, and they all take losses on that day.
So tough weekend for the MAC.
Yep. Good weekend for the Centennial.
All right, yeah, and so hitting a couple other games before we get into the weekend, we did have the battle for Kentucky where Center took on Transylvania, and Center came out on top, took the Kentucky Cup, so congrats to them. They should get a bucket of fried chicken or something like that to celebrate. Yep. And then we also had Catholic Mary Wash, which this one I didn't see too much of, but Dan, I know you caught a little bit of it.
A little bit. I got to go to this game.
Wow, okay, yeah. What did you see?
Yeah, interesting game. I'm glad I went. It was pretty electric, especially down the stretch. Got really tight. It was super intense. You had like a lot of kind of weird bounces and like extra mans and like weird penalties and stuff like that. That like it was a good game to catch in person.
Awesome.
Another reason it was actually a pretty good game to catch in person is like compared to the streams, when you get to go in person, you get to see like and really get a feel for the athleticism of each team and things like that a bit more than when you're just watching on the film. And Mary Wash has some horses. Like, they have some pretty big kids, some pretty athletic dudes, and some pretty good athletes in the middle of the field that really have been, I'll say, the core of this team. Like, they create in transition. They push offense. Like, they get downhill in six-on-six sets, those, like, athletic midfielders. And then if it's not those guys, it's the balls in JD Nosemack's stick, and he's quite the distributor. So between, you know, the start of the season, he's already racked up a ton of assists, and he's definitely proven to be one of the better quarterbacks and distributors that is in D3.
Awesome.
So Mary Wash, definitely interesting, definitely athletic, and has a pretty significant identity already on offense. Catholic is also an interesting team. They play a pace that is kind of difficult to prep for, and it shows. In the beginning of that game, they come out, they go up 5-0, and then from there, like, it's a bit more even, and Mary Wash is able to slowly chip away, and they have a big third quarter. But Catholic is definitely an interesting squad. I said going into the game that I wasn't totally sure, you know, what the result would end up being. They were up 5-0 pretty early, so it looked like it was going to roll with them. And then it ends up being a tight two-goal game. So pretty interesting result there. And then another piece of the puzzle here, Catholic, like I've said earlier that like I wasn't totally sure like who I would have labeled as the favorite to go and win in the Landmark again. Mm-hmm. I think after seeing them in person, I'm probably saying that it's still them.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. They were more impressive on defense than I expected them to be without Hillary. They kind of, I won't say completely replaced him one for one, but they have another big defender that's in there and like causes mayhem and does a good job like disrupting the flow of the offense. And so he's pretty good. And then offensively, Catholic has six dudes. They're top six guys when they roll those guys out. It's pretty good. Like that's, if we were to do unit rankings of the top six offensive players for each team, like I don't know exactly where Catholic falls, but they're in the discussion of the top 20 for sure. Like they have a pretty, maybe top 20 is probably a hedge, like potentially higher than that with that top six. And they're pretty slick and they have a pretty solid chemistry to them. They play with a bit of organization to them and like they aren't just out there like free flowing, like, and not understanding their reads, but they're also not in this like overly scripted offense where they're like robotic by any means either.
Kind of like maybe we're used to seeing like a Tufts out of, like they play within the sets that they're in, and a lot of different guys can come in and get looks and shoot.
Which is an interesting comparison that you make, because do you know where the Catholic coach comes from?
Is he out of the Tufts coaching tree?
He's a Jumbo. Yeah.
There we go.
And then they have a Jumbo coach in the box who I got to talk to the staff for a few minutes after the game, and I was sure to give him credit because he did a really good job coaching the box. I mean, he just coached his ass off for 60 minutes.
Awesome.
They all did, like, not to take anything away from any of those guys coaching on, or any of that staff, but he was just particularly noticeable because he was running the box and then did a really good job coaching their face-off guys. And it made a huge difference down the stretch. Like, that may be, going back and thinking through it, like, the face-off play down the stretch. And then there's a sequence where Mary Wash is down one and goes EMO, has the ball, and it results in a Catholic transition goal. And that extends the lead to two. And then, like, so that sequence and then Catholic's ability to win faceoffs down the stretch were two of the biggest differences in the game to me.
Awesome. Okay. Well, definitely a team I'm going to want to keep my eyes on moving through the season here.
Which might be the perfect segue into talking preview.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get into this week, because we did have a lot that happened this past week, but boy, do we have a great week up and coming too.
Yeah. And like we said, so, I mean, full transparency here, we'll finish, you know, weekend watching and review and all that type of stuff. We get in here, we're recording on Monday night. This gets released on Wednesday morning. So a lot of what we've been doing, a lot of like where we currently are, is in that review process. So if you're sitting here wanting and wishing that we have a bit deeper, more detailed previews coming, make sure you are keeping an eye out for plenty of content this week where we'll have some more preview type stuff later in the week.
Yeah, definitely. And also feel free to hit us up on social media, Instagram, Twitter. Shoot us over any questions that you got, any points that you'd like us to hit on the pod. Feel free to let us know. We're definitely happy to talk about those as well. But let's get into the week. Why don't we?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's start right there with, let's keep it rolling with Catholic.
So Wednesday night, the day you'll be listening to this, we'll have WNL versus Catholic. That's going to be a pretty good one. I'm going to want to see a dominant performance from WNL to know if they're for real after beating York this weekend. But I think this is going to be the perfect test for them with Catholic and how well they've been playing.
And I love talking about revenge games. Like, they beat us last year. It's our turn to go back and get them. You got that narrative going here for WNL because Catholic stole one over them early in the year last year.
Yep.
So, you know, get a little bit of that narrative going. Got to go back and avenge that loss. Got to keep the train rolling after landing a big-time win early in the year. Like, the last thing you want to do right now, if you're WNL, is get too big of a head after that win and then come out and lose to Catholic, you know? Like,
definitely.
Keep that train rolling if you're them. You got to want to stay hungry, stay humble, and, you know, keep continuing to put your best foot forward.
And this is definitely going to be a big test for them with Catholic. Also, another notable game we have Wednesday, should be a pretty good one. I think personally going to be the one to watch on Wednesday is going to be York versus Ursinus. This will be a pretty good one. I think this is going to be a lot closer than what we maybe expected. But when the when we saw the schedule when the season first came out, I think personally, if York can get back to playing a little bit more of a clean game, clean up that transition and clearing game, things like that, I think this will be a game that goes in the Spartans' favor. But if they come out and play how they did against WNL with sloppy play, lots of turnovers, I could easily see in this go Ursinus's way.
Yeah, your Ursinus is certainly not the team that you can just, like, roll through. And like I said earlier, Tyler Neal, what's the Shaq line? Like, I apologize. I was not totally familiar with your game.
Like, yeah, yeah.
Like, I think I may have – he may have been a little bit under the radar here, underrated heading into this season. Mm-hmm. He was really impressive in that game. And Stevenson kind of plays into their hands and, like, goes sliding like crazy and gives them mismatches and all sorts of stuff. And but, I mean, he does a really good job of taking advantage of it. And he's smart. He's really smart. He sees where you're sliding and filling from, and he likes a good skip. So he's dangerous. Your Sinus has done a really good job of putting their guy, similar to what I was saying about, like, being within a structure but not being, like, robotic. Your Sinus has done a good job of getting their guys into A, structure, but B, it's structure that has their guys in positions that allow their strengths to shine. So, like, that's pretty good from them offensively. It's a lot of, like, two inside guys and, like, a cut with a well-timed, like, exchange. And, like, it's pretty good. And it's pretty it's tough to prepare. It's tough if you're going to go slide into everything the way that Stevenson does. It's tough to defend like that over and over and over again without giving up mismatches or having some sort of breakdown. You know?
Yep, I'm definitely going to be looking to see how York's defense combats that. Maybe if they can go be slow to a lot of these slides. We did see it against WNL where they maybe didn't slide too much, but they kind of got caught looking on the backside and with that second slide. So if they can kind of fix that, correct the ship this week, I think that should help York.
Both teams get one game of scout on the other opponent. This is a game that both teams were expecting to kick their seasons off with each other, so probably had a little bit of work already done and prepared for that game, mm-hmm. that then now got delayed, but you still feel like, particularly when you would typically have a Saturday to Wednesday turnaround, you probably feel pretty familiar. We've already mentioned Paust. He was pretty familiar with Stevenson. If there's one more team that he's going to be the next most familiar with, it's probably York. So I think both teams will have, you know, a feel for each other. And, you know, like you said, you mentioned game plans going into it and seeing exactly what ends up happening. I think this is one of those games that, like, a good game plan is going to matter big time.
What a pickup for that coaching staff, by the way, with Paust going to Ursinus.
Like, yeah, right at the last second, too.
Yep, so that's our Wednesday slate. Should be awesome. Feel free to tune into those games if you're around and free on Wednesday night. But Saturday, we definitely have a good chunk of a lot of good teams here playing each other. So let's dive into it here a little bit. Let's start with one of my personal favorites. We got the Lynchburg versus Cabrini matchup. I know this is definitely a historic rivalry. And I think it's going to be one of the best tests for Lynchburg early on here. We talked about how well they played against St. Mary's, real dominant performance. This will be a little bit different of a game with Cabrini. I think a little bit more of a test. And I'm going to want to see him come out and do something similar to what they did to St. Mary's.
Yeah, it's always –
You
expect them to treat Cabrini?
I don't expect the same result.
You'd like to see it,
though. I would like to see the same result.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
This is a game that literally my note says always high pace and intense. And it is. Like, it always is some sort of – it's always one of those games that, like, you can expect both sides to just, like, go – like, for the lack of a better term, balls to the wall. Like,
yep.
It's going to be one of those games, like you die before you lose, like, type of a thing. Like, you leave it all out there. And historically, we've gotten some awesome games out of these two.
Some of the best D3 games.
Yeah, I mean, like, just, like, perfectly intense, like, chippy, like, physical. But also, both of these teams are pretty slick and skilled. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get this, like, tough ground ball in the middle of the field that like rolls out and then it ends up being like a behind the back feed out of the ground ball, like scrum, that then you end up with a good goal out of it. Like it always ends up with some highlight plays that have something to do with somebody like laying it all on the line, like some sort of tough play.
Yep.
So definitely excited for this one.
I think my takeaway here is going to be the team wearing the least amount of tights.
There won't be any tights on either team, I don't think.
I think we're going to see two tights from Cabrini and zero from
Lynchburg. Yeah, you may get them from Cabrini, but it'll be like more...
Yep.
Like, it'll be like Philly tough dude that thinks that the tights are swaggy.
Yeah, yeah. So let me get Lynchburg there, but it's going to be a tight one. Keep going here. We got Catholic, who we've talked about quite a bit. They're taking on F&M, a pod fave here. I would love to see Catholic pull this out, just being honest with you. Do you think they got a good shot here?
I feel like it's our first good look at him, so it's kind of hard to say.
Okay.
But I'm excited for this one. I think that, like, we keep referring to the top 30. When this top 30 edition comes out this week, F&M and Catholic are going to be pretty dang close to each other. So I think, like, I'm expecting that to be a pretty dang good game.
Yep, me too. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Keeping going down the list, though, I think I'm going to call it my game of the week, the personal big dog game of the week.
Oh, wow.
Yep. We got Gettysburg playing Salisbury.
Yeah.
This is going to be a great time to see, is that Salisbury defense for real? And is that new Gettysburg goalie for real?
Yeah, yeah. Get a lot of answers, questions answered here in this in this matchup, I feel like.
This is a huge matchup for such early on in the season. What are you kind of expecting from here? What do you expect to see?
Yeah, so like I said, I'm excited this week to kind of dive in and start to match the pieces together a bit more than I've been able to so far with all of the review that has been mostly on the brain here after this last weekend of just madness. But with all that said, I think my first instincts here are similar to what you said, but I don't just like to say Salisbury's defense is going to be bad or whatever.
Okay.
I like to give a little bit of nuance to my take here. Fair. Which I still don't think Salisbury's defense is bad because their poles make up for whatever gap that there exists. But I think that the short stick D mid play has left a bit to be desired. And of teams that are going to be most suited to be able to take advantage of that, it's those big midfielders that Gettysburg plays. Yep. So it'll be interesting to see how they decide to match up. And we don't know exactly what Gettysburg's starting attack is going to be. We know that the midfield is probably going to consist of Kieran Ward and Kyle. I think it's Kyle Howard. What's the name of the baseball player?
Ryan Howard. Baseball. Yeah.
Yeah. Kyle Howard, I think, is the Gettysburg midfielder. Okay. This always happens. But if they can find a way to manipulate the offense so that those guys get matched up with short sticks, I think they can take advantage of them. Like, they can just drive them to danger space. And with Salisbury, who doesn't really want to slide things, like, if you can drive those short sticks to danger space, you might be able to just, you know, turn the corner and score some unassisted goals. Or, like, hit an inside roll where the adjacent, like, on that corner isn't ready to be able to get to, you know, like those are the type of things that those Gettysburg midfielders with size can potentially take advantage of.
Definitely. And yet talking about it at the other end a little bit, you mentioned how, you know, Dowd, definitely one of your players of the year this year. You got Ferreira, Jude Brown, just so many options. Yeah, on that
Gettysburg is
going to
have
offense.
I've also said on this podcast that I think Gettysburg's defense is going to end the season as a top five defense. They bring a lot back. Those pulls from last year, basically all of them come back. Zach Puckhaber is one of the best defenders in the country. He held Ferreira's last year to 0-0. That's 0 goals and 0 assists.
Yep.
I don't know that that's happened. Like, if that's happened in his career previously, it can't have happened very many times. And he holds him to that, so he gets another. That'll be probably the next matchup that we see in that one. But who knows? Maybe they take a chance and put Puckhaber on Brown and try and trust one of their other options on Ferreira. Who knows? Maybe they take him and bump him up and try and get him on Dowd because he's been terrorizing people. Like, it'll be interesting to see how they decide to try and match up with Salisbury. But if there's a team that's suited to do it, it might be that defense. And you mentioned that you like their goalie play, so
we'll find out. I think this will be a huge make-or-break game for Chase Morgan. You know, if the defense can come out and play the way that they can, and the offense can get those opportunities that you're talking about on the short sticks, I think it's going to come down to the goalie play. Can he make those 12 to 15 saves that are going to keep him into the game, or is he going to be just 7 or 8 saves that allow them to lose the game?
Right.
So I think this is going to be an awesome game to watch. It's going to be so much fun. I even got the big dog bet of the week on this, so we're going to get to that a little bit later. Yep. But for those,
you want to save it for the end.
Yep. Yep. Right. We'll save the bet for the end. So we'll get into that a little bit more right at the end there.
Okay.
Yep. So moving on to another game, which I think, if it's not the game of the week, it's the co game of the week, and that's going to be the CNU Stevenson game. Love to be there in person and see this one. But Dan, what do you think is going to happen?
I don't know. Stevenson under the lights is always a different environment. Like, it just kind of brings out the demons in teams sometimes.
It really does.
So, half the battle, I feel like, for CNU is going to be going in there with the ability to just, like, Mr. Deed say goose fraba sometimes and, like, keep everything even keel, calm, and collected and, like, you know, stay disciplined and keep to the game plan and all that type of stuff. Like, if they can do that, CNU, I think, is the better team, you know?
100%.
If Stevenson is able to get CNU to buy into all, you know, start talking trash and, you know, start thinking and doing all this stuff that is, like, outside of what they want to do and, like, what is their typical identity, like, you know, maybe lose some discipline and start fouling some or whatever it is, like, Stevenson will have a chance, like, I guess. I mean, I wanted to be super all in on Stevenson this year, and then, like, they just come out and have this, like, toxicity already where, like, you can see them, like, arguing amongst the defenders pretty quickly, and, like, every time there's a call that doesn't go their way, it's like they're talking to the refs and, like, palms up in.
It's like LeBron
in
that one game, he's on his knees pleading.
And, like, I don't know. I just think that if that's your recipe, like, you have to get teams to do, like, to buy into that, then, like, that's probably not the best recipe to go and win a whole bunch of games.
It's just it's insane, though. I'm inclined to agree with you. But it does kind of take me back to our senior year. If I can throw in my 1 minute personal anecdote right here.
Yeah.
Our senior year, we played them, and we were pretty good our senior year. We were definitely ranked above Stevenson. And we started out the year playing them. It wasn't our first game, but it was near the beginning. We played them in Stevenson under the lights.
I think it was the first night of the Mustang Classic.
Okay, maybe that was it. And it was just exactly to your point where playing them under the lights is a completely different game than playing them anywhere else at any different time. You know, they're a different animal and a different beast that you have to attack, and they'll bring you down to their level and make you play their game when you're playing at their stadium. So if CNU is able to stay out of that, stay composed, and stick to their game, I think it's going to be definitely a CNU win. But if Stevenson kind of bring them down and make them play scrappy like that, I could see it kind of being a scrappy game.
And also, like, this current situation, Stevenson off of a loss, playing a team that's already ranked significantly higher than them, like, it almost really did feel like Stevenson felt this, like, pressure around them in that Your Sinus game that, like, we're supposed to be better. We're like, we should be rolling these kids type of a thing. And, like, Your Sinus, like, didn't, like, ever blink, like, didn't care that was the perception or whatever. And then this situation is, like, kind of the opposite where, like, Stevenson is now the underdog, like, the team that people are expecting to get to lose. And, like, I think that somehow favors them, like, to be able to go out and play, like, more intuition free, like, less nervous, and, like, more like a game of we're not supposed to win this thing anyways, so let's just, like, rally for each other and do this thing. Like,
yep.
I don't know, though. Like, I don't know that I totally believe it ends up happening. But, like I said, like, I could see that being more of a situation where they play better than they did against Your Sinus just because they're playing a team that they're not supposed to beat.
Yeah. No, I can see that for sure. And with how slow CNU came out last week at home against Grove City, if this is a similar point where Stevenson can get a couple points on them going into halftime, I can see this just being an absolute dogfight come the third quarter.
Yeah.
For sure. So this will be a really fun one. Make sure you get eyes on this if you can. It's 7 p.m. Saturday night. But we'll keep going and touch on a pod favorite of ours, Grove City. Taking on Baldwin Wallace, little revenge game from last year when they took it to him. Grove City's
overtime.
Overtime game there.
Yep.
Grove City's definitely going to look to get one back, especially since playing so great against CNU.
Yep.
Dan, do you think they can kind of keep that momentum that they had in the first half of that CNU game
and
take that into this Baldwin-Wallace game?
Yeah, so I thought that Baldwin-Wallace had a shot at giving Denison a game. Tweeted that they would be the potential upset watch, you know, like weird stuff happens, Midwest madness. Denison beat him by 10. So, yeah, Baldwin-Wallace, like, maybe has some guys for him that are ready to play or whatever. But that Denison result doesn't exactly give me a whole bunch of confidence. That Denison result relative to Grove City's result against CNU doesn't give me much confidence that they're going to be coming out with a victory again this year.
Got it. Got it. Makes sense. Well, going to have to see how that one plays out. I think Brett Gladstone is going to take over that game and definitely be a difference maker in that and should lead Grove City to a win. Couple teams we want to touch on here, maybe playing their first game of the season, something like that. We do have SJF taking on Ithaca. It's going to be their first real game of the year, as well as Western New England breaking out against Coast Guard.
What is that word? St. John Fisher versus what?
SJF.
Yeah, versus who?
Ithaca.
Spell it.
I-T-H-I-C-A. Ithaca. Oh, no. There's one always one a week.
Classic. Sorry, I didn't mean to disrupt you, but I felt that that was worth it.
No, that was good. And finally, WAC will be starting off, taking out WNL.
No, WAC already played.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Okay. Guess we don't have to touch on that one too much then. Anything you're kind of looking at for these games, though?
No, I think, you know, getting first eyes on St. John Fisher is the biggest priority of everything that you just said. And then one more game to kind of just throw in the mix is that Western New England versus Coast Guard game that, like, you know.
We don't know what Western New England really has
yet. And we don't know how good Coast Guard is, but perhaps they can string together some wins here and make a little name for themselves in this 23 season.
I think so. Yep, that'll be interesting to see. And then finally on Sunday to round out the weekend, we do have Roanoke taking on Dickinson. That should be a fun one. That's going to be at noon. And then we have Babson and Union, which will get our first look at the champion runner-ups in the Dutchman there.
Yes. Yep. Very well said. Definitely interested in getting our first eyes on them and seeing, you know, who's going to be the alpha on that defense and seeing, you know, what other complementary pieces that Union's going to be able to do to fill in around Burns and Davis and Peter Kipp, you know, three guys that returned from the core of that offense last year. You know, whatever those complementary pieces are, exactly how good they are and how much they can impact the game is going to be really, really dang impactful for Union moving forward.
Yep, yeah. One name that you're definitely going to hear out of this game is going to be Peter Burns. And I think this Union team
another
is
game you
be.
Can bank on hearing out of this game, Babson and Union.
Yep.
Chi-Chi Price.
Oh, that's a great name.
Chi-Chi.
Yeah, I like that. But how good Union is going to be this year, I think it's going to really depend upon Peter Burns and how well he can carry that team.
Yeah.
I think he's definitely the guy that moves the needle on the offensive end, and he's going to have a great year if the Dutchmen want to repeat.
And they have a stud in the short stick position. They're very good facing off.
Great in the goal.
Very solid in the goal. We have a team that's, like, tough and has built this reputation of being, like, hard-nosed and gritty, which, like, translates pretty well year over year from field to field, like, similarly what we were saying about ball movement.
Mm-hmm.
Hustle and grit works on any field in the country too.
Yes, it
you
does.
Know, and it goes a long way, and they do a good job of making sure that every time they roll a squad out, they got that element going for them.
Definitely.
So definitely excited to get some eyes there on Union.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, that should take us through the weekend. It's going to be a great weekend. Make sure you're checking out the Inside Lacrosse scoreboard for all of your up-to-date information for anything D3 score related. But if you're good, Dan, you want to get into some big dogs, big takes?
Yep, I sure do.
Let's do
it. It's time.
Oh, my
and
favorite.
There's no way you're outdoing yourself from last week.
This week on Big Dogs Takes, you're going to see a little bit more conservative takes, I would say. a little bit, dialing it back a little bit. But it's because we have a little bit of information, and I know a little bit more now. So a little bit more well-informed, big takes. So going right down the list, I'm going to hit my top one here. It's that Muhlenberg's a top team. You got to give me some flowers on that. I know we already hit it early. I would like some more if you have them. I think Harris Teeter's right down the street if you want to go get a bouquet, something like that. But I deserve all the flowers for that one.
Kirk Herbstreit never dances on graves like this.
My name's not Kirk Herbstreit, is it?
No.
So just wanted to take a quick second, make sure we could all highlight how great of a take that Muhlenberg take was. But we'll keep going. Number two on my list. I'm not freaking out about the York or the RIT loss in overtime. Both these games are very early in the season. We see this a ton where teams are still working out, you know, who's going to be on their lineups, who's their dominant force, who are they going to be running in the crunch time. And, you know, I think we're going to see a lot of changes with both of these teams come the end of the year. So I'm not worried about these close games or these early losses. Not pressing any panic buttons right now. I'm going to take some time, get a little bit more information. I think York's going to clean it up. I think RIT is going to get a little bit more dominant in the midfield. And I think those are going to be two teams that we're talking about in the top 10, top 5 region come April.
All right. I like that. Pressing the panic button.
Nope.
Okay, good.
My third one, it is a little hot. It does hurt me a little bit because I love my goalies. I love giving them the shine. But in that same vein, I do have to call out when I'm seeing not great goalie play, or maybe not to the level that it should be played at. And I'm currently seeing that a little bit at Christopher Newport with Hanway.
Yeah.
He's a guy that we've talked about in the All-American discussion, yeah, preseason,
fourth
even
team.
Last year, fourth team.
Yeah, coming in.
But we did talk, when we talked about it, one of the things that we said was he's benefited a lot from the great defenses that have been in front of him. And a lot of his saves have been because they've had, you know, easy shots or, you know, not tough looks. So he's really benefited from that. And I think without Wayne this year, we're really seeing a little bit more, some more shots and more like just tougher opportunities for him. And especially in that Grove City game, I saw a lot of shots, especially, you know, that 13-yard. It was a rocket, not taking anything away from the shot, but that's definitely one where you look back and you're like, an All-American goalie that's going to keep us in the game and be a cornerstone of our team makes that save 10 out of 10 times. So to see that one go in, that makes me feel like, you know, I'm a little concerned there. Also seeing, you know, like a lot of body saves with him and things like that, I want to see him, you know, get the stick involved a little bit more. So would like to see him kind of get back on pace to where he was a couple years ago. And I think that that's kind of an area of concern for me.
All right, locked in. Big dog's growing concern on CNU goalie play.
Yep.
Rocked on.
And I think the third one.
Yep, fourth.
Fourth, yep. Yes. Fourth and final one.
Yep.
I'm going to walk my St. Mary's take from last week back a little bit.
Okay.
But.
Seems smart.
Yeah. Yep, but I am going to reapply that take,
ooh,
which for those that didn't hear last week, my take was St. Mary's gets a little bit better on offense with the
losing best player. Yeah,
losing Jude Brown.
Yep.
You know, maybe in hindsight, that wasn't the best take. But I'm starting to see that a little bit with Catholic and how you talk about their offense and how well that they move the ball. I think they're doing a really great job right now. What was the name?
Crowley,
yep. Yeah. Great player for them last year. But I think the guys that they have out there now that are filling in for him are really dynamic. And I don't want to, you know, repeat myself from last week, but I think the people that they have filling in for him and the six players that they have on offense are a lot more dynamic now that it's not just in Crowley's stick. I think all these players are a threat and are starting to shine now that they're getting the ball a little bit
that,
more.
That, my friend, is a pretty good take. I like that one.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and just jump in. I'm going to keep it rolling. Mm-hmm. I don't have that many, but I do have one significant takeaway from the weekend that I think is worth talking about.
Okay.
I think this year, more than any other year that we've had so far in the past, I'll say past few seasons, to me, for the past few seasons, RIT, Tufts, Salisbury have been practically, and I'll say perhaps not last year, or the year before.
Okay.
For the Southern teams. But RIT and Tufts, and then Salisbury, essentially those three teams make the top three tier, like top tier of D3, right? Those are the three teams that for the past few seasons have just been relatively untouchable.
Yeah.
CNU right under it, beating them a couple times. York beat Salisbury a couple times. You have these teams that like intermittently will beat them and have won regular season games over them. Mm-hmm. But in crunch time, Salisbury's won. They've also gotten to national championships. They haven't won it in since 17, but they've gotten there. So, like, to me, like, those three teams have been just kind of invincible, like, untouchable. Not completely invincible, but a level of untouchable that, like, is noteworthy of them being in a tier of their own.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that. Yeah.
And then there's another tier of, like, maybe five teams, and it kind of intermixes, and then another tier after that. And, like, essentially, you could see teams stealing a win over the tier above them. This year, more so than any other years, we're going to have more, like, non-existent like boundary of tiers. Like that doesn't gonna exist any as much anymore. I think there's more parity. Like the best of the best teams aren't as good as they've been the last couple years, I feel like. And maybe that's just early in the year, so like you need to continue to mesh and develop. But like if the RIT team that played Muhlenberg on Saturday played RIT from the championship in May last year, it's a beatdown.
That's a blowout.
It's a beatdown.
Yeah.
And I think similarly, like, if Salisbury of this year played Salisbury of last year, maybe they're not the best example because they had some injection. But Tufts, I think if Tufts of this year played Tufts of last year, it's a romp. York of last year plays York of this year. Romping. Like, I just feel like there's more parity this year. There's more, like, room for the top of D3 to get picked off.
Okay.
For me, that's pretty dang exciting. Like, I think we're going to have more chaos and confusion, and like it's going to be harder than any other year, which means I picked a dang good time to start doing it to rank 30 lacrosse teams in the Division III world.
You really, really hit that nail on the head there. And I think we've started to see that over the past years, you know, starting to allude to this, where you see a team like Union and you see a team like Christopher Newport making these deep runs into the NCAA and, you know, ultimately making it to the championship and having an opportunity to win the whole thing.
Yeah, and furthermore than that, like, it's just become more, like, a bit more vast. Like, you have more teams that are just more dangerous. Like, and then to the point that I was making, like, just the top of D3 isn't necessarily as, like, eye-testy, like, alarmingly, like, that team is legit as it's been in previous years, I feel like.
Definitely.
Like, teams, as we've gone through, like, there's flaws that you can pick at for basically every team we've talked about so far this year.
Mm-hmm. Unless Tufts comes out and just blows us out of the water and is perfect in every single way.
And I don't expect them to be, like, I expect to be able to pick some flaws from them, too.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great point. Something I can get along with, for sure.
Yeah, so, like, definitely will be interesting. I think we're going to get a bit more parity than usual, closer games, some more chaos, which, like, all that sounds like good news for us.
I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Better games, I'm in.
Darn right.
All right. Well, you want to get to the big dog bet of the week? We alluded to it a little bit earlier.
Yep.
It's a fun one.
Yep. Let's do it.
So, real quick, this is going to be kind of a new segment for the listeners. So, every week, we're going to pick a line of the week.
Yep, make it, take it.
Yep, and it's going to be a make it, take it basis. So I set the first line last week, and I set the line at Muhlenberg RIT with Muhlenberg plus 4.5. So for our non-bettors out there, that would mean Muhlenberg gets a 4.5-point handicap, and then we go on from there.
So they 4.5, just take it another level.
Yep.
It's either 4 goals or 5 goals, which is why they set the line at 4.5. So correct. 4 is a cover, 5 is not.
Yep, exactly. So in my prediction, I was saying Muhlenberg would keep it within a 4-goal game. Obviously, it goes to triple overtime, and we have Cap as the big loser for last week.
Week one loser.
So we got a board now that we can track it every week. Pretty high tech stuff. It's going to be great. But since I won last week, I get to set and pick the line this week.
It'll be a make it take it style. When I win this week, I will then set the lines for the following, probably the entire rest of the season.
You wish. But I'm going to go in. I've already alluded to it to the listeners a little bit, but I'm going to pick Gettysburg Salisbury, my game of the week, for my betting game of the week. And I'm going to go Gettysburg plus 5.5.
5.5.
5.5.
Interesting.
Yep. 5.5 points there.
I think I take Gettysburg to cover.
Covering? Really? Okay.
5.5 seems steep.
It does.
It seems steep for.
I thought you would take the Salisbury.
Well, I like Gettysburg defense. I said that. You know? Like I think I'd take Gettysburg to cover on 5.5.
Just as an extra little tidbit.
Early in the year, we've seen some ugliness. I think most of the top of D3 is more pluckable than previously.
Yep.
Yeah. My instinct here, and the more that I like think through it, is I will lock myself in on a Gettysburg 5.5.
Okay. All right. I'll give that to you. I did have a fun little tidbit of the over-under, setting that at 23.5.
23.5.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a little bit low-scoring game, like you talked about.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'll be on the Salisbury side of that. I'll go Salisbury minus 5.5 there. So I win if Salisbury wins by 6.
Correct.
You win anything less than that.
Yeah. Yes.
Perfect.
Yes.
All right. And if you guys got any picks that you have, any ideas that you want to run by us, feel free to tweet us your picks of the week. If you think you're on Cap's side, you're on my side for this, you think Salisbury's going to blow us out, let us know. Tweet us. Be on our side. We'll root with you. We'll rock with you.
That's right. Should we start the outro then?
I think so. I think that was a great pod.
All right. So with all that said, we appreciate you guys. We look forward to coming on back next week. Peace and love.
Love y'all.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.